It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
To Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Wow, this is quickly becoming like one of our favorite times of the week. We'll do it every single Wednesday, and I know you and I, Dibs, are both kind of chomping at the bit here to go, not player by player. We're not going to go through the entire roster.
We might.
But maybe close.
Yeah.
You know?
The man's got info now. Got the knowledge.
Well, he is senior producer, NFL Films, and he's joining us on the River Islands guest line, as he will do every single Wednesday at 3 o'clock to break down the film like no other. It's none other than Greg Cosell. Hey, Greg, how you doing this week?
I'm doing great. I'm just curious, was that lead-in song representative of your younger days, or are we okay with that?
I'm completely okay with that.
Big time.
So I'm going to say maybe both, Greg. How about that? Can I answer that way?
You can answer any way you like.
Okay, that's what the film says, Greg. Right. So that's what we're going to go with. All right, where to start? I guess Jordan Mason is the best place to start. So first and foremost, just what did you see with his evening, but maybe more important, how did it progress? Like, what did he look like when it got to the fourth quarter and he was north of 20 carries?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot there that with the run game. But if you're just speaking about him, you know, I think that was evident even early on, but it was clear as the game progressed how physical a runner he is. And there were some clear examples where the Jets defense later in the game was not particularly thrilled with having to tackle him. You know, he's one of those runners that you wouldn't say he's shifty and elusive. He's a downhill velocity runner. He has natural power. There's a physical presence to his running style. He has just enough lateral quickness where he can work effectively in confined space. And as I said, he's got really good finishing traits. He's a difficult guy to tackle and probably not a lot of fun to tackle.
I can't imagine it. And it seemed like he got to the second level ad nauseum against the Jets defense. Those holes were gigantic.
They sure were.
Did they go about the run scheme differently, Greg? Because it seemed like there was less use check and more just straight ahead zone power with Jordan Mason.
Yeah, there were multiple run game concepts, as there always are, with the 49ers. You know, I think when you play the Niners, you're very conscious of having to defend the C gap. That's where, you know, so people can kind of visualize that, you know, right next to the center, the offensive center is the A gap. You go over one, it's the B gap. You go over one more, it's the C gap. That's kind of where their run game is foundationally built. But obviously, they do more than that. So they did a number of different things. The key thing was that he ran almost exclusively out of what we would call base personnel. When Juszczyk was on the field, when there were two tight ends on the field, when there was both Juszczyk and two tight ends, 23 of his 28 runs came in these base personnel packages.
Greg, I'm curious to know if you saw them running to the right more often than in the past, because famously they love to run behind Trent Williams, but it looked like they were running to the right more often than in the past. Is that so?
You know, I didn't chart it, so I don't know the exact answer, and I don't want to make something up, but I didn't get the sense that they were only working to one side. I felt like it was pretty multiple. You know, it's funny. Sometimes the shorter runs are the really cool runs. Like, I thought that his 5-yard touchdown run in the third quarter was just a an example of great design and execution. I thought that you had an unbelievable double team by the center, Brendel, and Banks, the left guard, and it was on Quinnen Williams, who's obviously a really good player. I love the way Kittle inserted as a lead blocker on the stacked linebacker Mosley, and then Samuel came in from the right side of the formation and kind of cracked back on the safety Clark. I thought, you know, that was just one of those runs. Obviously, it was a touchdown, but it wasn't a long run necessarily, but it was just beautiful. Beautifully designed and executed.
Just a clinic in the run game. I can't help but get my eyes on Dominic Pooney over there in the right guard, yeah, making his first start. What did you see on the film from Dominic?
Yeah, he looked really good. To be honest with you, I didn't watch a ton of preseason football. I'm being honest, it's not my favorite thing. But
that's good honesty.
I thought that he showed early in the game and then throughout the game both strength as a run blocker. I thought he was good at one-on-one pass protection. You know, there's two blocks that in the run game, more than two, but two that you have to be able to execute in the NFL or as a guard in particular, or you're not going to be a starting guard. One is the backside cutoff block. So if the zone run game goes away from you, you have to be able to execute the backside cutoff block. Then in the zone run game, when it goes to your side, you have to be able to execute the front side reach block. In other words, the reach block is a case where the player is just outside of you and you have to get outside of him to seal him to the inside. Those are two blocks that you have to be able to execute, one on the backside, one on the front side, and I thought that he did that very well in this game. He's going to have to continue to do it well.
Senior producer, NFL Films, Greg Cosell is with us here on Willard and Dibbs, as he will be every single Wednesday afternoon on 95.7 The Game. Greg, people for a while now have been running out of questions to ask about Brock Purdy, but one of the ones that was still remaining was, boy, I wonder what he would look like without Christian McCaffrey. So, Greg, what did he look like without Christian McCaffrey?
Well, I mean, to me, those two things are mutually exclusive. I mean, obviously, McCaffrey's a great player, but I mean, when Purdy has to drop back and throw a ball, that's not necessarily a function of Christian McCaffrey. I thought Purdy was kind of Purdy. He was efficient. He made good throws. He's got enough movement that he can move around and make plays. Look, I don't know if we discussed this last week. I can't remember. You know, I'm old, guys. I can't remember what we discussed last week. But you know, Purdy the scheme and the system and Purdy's ability to execute it at a high level all go together. And, you know, there's some great examples of that. Kittle, the 26-yarder to start the second quarter field goal drive, was a beautifully designed what we call a flood concept. It's a three-level stretch concept. Kittle ran the intermediate route. Beautiful design. I'm sure you guys remember Juszczyk's 34-yard reception, which was a Kyle Shanahan classic, because what he likes to do is put a second-level defender who has both a run and a pass responsibility, he likes to put that player in conflict. And that's exactly what he did on the Juszczyk 34-yard reception. That was beautiful design. When I saw that play on the coaching tape, you know, I got excited. That's what I love about football. But, you know, Purdy just executes what he's asked to execute at a really high level. And I think people lose sight of how difficult that is to do, play after play after play, week after week after week, and they view him, well, he's just running a great system. You know, that's really hard to do, and he does it at a really high level.
Yeah, it was a clinical performance from Brock, and yeah, he didn't have to overwhelm to go out there and have a pretty lopsided victory for the 49ers. I want to ask you about the defense, because other than the early drive in the first half, they had their way with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets offense. What did you see on the film as to why the Niners D had such an edge?
Well, I think their D-line, I mean, you could argue that the main D-line, obviously they sub and have a rotation, but when you have Bosa and Floyd on the edge and Hargrave and Collins inside, and I think we talked about Collins last week, Collins has always been a really, really good player, and I think 49er fans are going to really like this guy, and it showed up the other night, but their defensive front is really, really good, and it's just really difficult to block. And then there's Fred Warner, who I've been saying saying for years is just the best linebacker in football. I mean, his ability to play inside out with speed and range and his ability to diagnose things instantly, I mean, there's no one as good as Fred Warner at the linebacker position in the NFL. So, you know, and they've got the thing that I think is overlooked now, too, is they have tremendous length at linebacker. Because when they're in their nickel and it's Warner and Campbell, you've got 6'3 and 6'4, and those are traits. People might not think about that, but that kind of length, that those are traits.
So, Greg, here's a question that comes up a lot with 49er fans. There's this thought that whatever Steve Wilks was calling last year just wasn't in alignment with, you know, the defensive line and the secondary and whatever Kyle Shanahan likes to run. The idea this year was they were going to get back to who they were before the hiring of Steve Wilks, with Nick Sorensen and Brandon Staley calling plays. What did you see? What can you explain to our audience with regard to the new regime?
You know, and I'm going to be totally honest here. Those are hard questions, and I'll tell you why. Because you'd have to be there in their meetings to understand how things are taught, what they're specifically asked to do. I mean, I think when all's said and done, like in this particular game, they hardly rushed more than four. I think twice on what Rodgers have maybe 23 or 24 dropbacks, I think twice they rushed five. You know, my guess is that this is going to be a defense that's going to rely predominantly on their on the four-man pass rush. Now, there are things they do in third down and sort of pure pass situations with what we call loaded fronts, where they line up three defensive linemen to one side of the center. Often Fred Warner will walk up to the guard opposite that load side, and they'll do some pressure schemes from that. But I think this is going to be a defense that relies a lot on the four-man pass rush, as long as it's being effective, and most weeks it will be. You know, there's always some weeks, you know, that things don't work exactly the right way. You know, I think from a coverage perspective, we saw in this game multiple coverage concepts on third down out of their nickel. They don't play dime. They're a nickel sub defense. We saw cover two, cover one, cover three. I think you'll see these kinds of things depending on the opponent. By NFL standards, I don't think they'll be overly detailed. Now, having said that, if I was sitting in the meetings, I'd probably have a different view. But I don't think they're going to be one of those teams that does a million things. I think it's going to be more execution-based than heavily scheme-based. That would be my sense.
Yeah, the stats indicate that they played out of the nickel 76% of the time and just 24% with the three linebackers. And the second linebacker, fans are concerned, Greg, about Devondre Campbell. He was guarding Wilson a couple of times in that first touchdown drive. It didn't go well. Does he have the speed to hold up in this defense when they go to the nickel and just two linebackers?
Yeah, I mean, he's got length. He can move. I mean, obviously, he's not going to be covering wide receivers man-to-man. There are sometimes the offense, through formation, through motions, can get a wide receiver on a linebacker. That does happen in the league, and there's really very few linebackers that can match up, so that's not a knock on Campbell. I mean, if anybody saw the Chiefs in the Thursday night opener, the way they got Rice matched up on linebackers and good linebackers, then, you know, that happens. They got him matched up on Roquan Smith, who I think most people would agree is a pretty damn good linebacker. So that's not a knock on Campbell, the fact that maybe Wilson beat him once, and I don't remember the specific play, but I mean, you know, that's not the way you're going to evaluate Campbell, by his ability to defend wide receivers.
Obviously, there's been a ton of talk the last handful of weeks about Brandon Ayuk, and we loved what you had to say last week when you talked about his fit in this system. Because he's being eased in, yes, there was at least one, maybe two dropped passes.
He dropped a touchdown.
Yeah. How would you compare what we saw from Brandon in this game to what you're used to seeing from him?
Well, I think he's played enough games in the National Football League that we know what he is. I mean, obviously he had that touchdown drop, which I'm sure he'd make that catch 9 out of 10 times. I think there was another one where I think it was a quick slant that went off his hands. You know, it's probably a rust issue. No matter what you do and what you do in the off season, if you're not in camp and you're not going through the whole process, it's different when you get into a real game. I mean, I don't think there's any reason to be worried about Brandon Ayuk. He's played a lot of games in the league. He's been a good receiver. We talked about him last week. He's not all of a sudden going to be a bad receiver. You know, he just He had a bad drop. He dropped a touchdown. It was very visible. It's a national TV game, you know, so it happens.
Greg, you're officially our pivot point in the week where we go from looking back to looking ahead, and the Niners getting ready to head to Minnesota. Sunday morning game on the fake field up there in Minnesota. What have you seen on the film from the Vikings that 49er fans should keep an eye out for on Sunday morning?
Well, let's look at the Vikings defense. They were very interesting this past week, and it could have been a function of who they were playing. Obviously, the Giants do not have a great offense. But one of the things that Brian Flores did a year ago, which was fascinating, and you rarely ever see this in the NFL, is it was a team that had the most three-man pass rushes in the league and the most six-man pass rushes in the league. Now, against the Giants, they stayed pretty basic with four-man pass rushes and played a lot of coverage behind it. Again, I'm not Brian Flores. I don't know what he'll do against the Niners, but that three-man versus six-man pass rush deal was fascinating to me watching their tape a year ago, because you rarely see that kind of thing in the league. And then, of course, on offense, and we can talk about this, you guys can jump in, you got your old buddy Sam Darnold,
yeah,
who looked good last week.
Well, what'd you see? Like, what you know, because he was here, but we didn't really ever get to see him play.
No.
So, yeah, what did you see from Sam?
I'll tell you what I saw, and I think this is where coaching comes into play. Kevin O'Connell, obviously coming from the Shanahan and McVay tree, you saw Darnold with really clean footwork, really understanding the connection between his drop and the route concepts. You saw some really well-schemed, well-designed play concepts that really presented him with clean, defined reads so that he could hit his back foot, and if it required him just to hit his back foot and deliver, he'd do that. If it required a hitch, he did that really cleanly. He looked extremely comfortable. Now, it's one game. No one's going to sit here after one game and say, man, this guy's on his way to a great year. But if we're talking this same way after six or seven games, then to me, you really have to talk about the coaching element. Because don't forget, he was coached last year, we know, with the Niners, even though he didn't play. And now he's with Kevin O'Connell, who's really, really good. So sometimes that's the difference, because you're dealing with a kid, and you know this, big kid, physical kid, throws the ball well. There's nothing from a physical trait standpoint that he can't do. He always had other issues, including mechanical and including what he was seeing, but he looked very comfortable this past week.
Looked like they were moving the ball around, too, to the various weapons. Justin Jefferson was not too much of an isolated target. I'm curious about the run game from what you saw from Minnesota. Looks like a little bit of a committee, and they use the fullback a little bit, too, don't they?
Oh, they play a lot out of 21 personnel as well with Ham. I can't, off the top of my head, remember how many snaps he had, but they did that last year. They do it now. They have a run game with the fullback as well, and they've got Aaron Jones, who's a really good back and a very good receiver. Got to be careful about that. Last week's game obviously was such that they got ahead. It was evident the Giants weren't really going to move the ball, so it didn't really require them to be probably as diverse and multiple offensively as they could be, as they probably went into the game with, but didn't need it. So we'll see how it goes. You'd assume this will be a closer game. But keep in mind, as I started this conversation, this defense did give the Niners some problems a year ago. It's a difficult defense to play against, and they can really pressure you. So that's something that the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan will really have to be aware of. Chris Forster, one of the best line coaches in the league, they'll be working on that, you know, trying to understand all their pressure concepts with different personnel on the field, because that's the last thing for any quarterback, to start a game where you feel like you're under pressure.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Greg Cosell, senior producer, NFL Films, with us here on Willard and Dibbs, and that's to say this, yes, it's the same concept defensively, but a lot of new personnel. Their defensive line is almost completely different. Right? I'd wonder if you could compare that group, though, to like the Jets group. Like, what's Brock Purdy facing this week versus last week?
I think he's facing a lot more diversity in pressure concepts. The Jets are not really a high-pressure defense, and when they are, their particular concepts are, I don't want to say they're basic, that's not the right word, but they're not they don't have a ton of them, whereas Minnesota has a lot of different looks. Minnesota often lines up with six or seven on the ball, on the line of scrimmage, so you don't know who's coming, who's dropping out. They make it difficult to try to figure that out because you have to make sure you protect. You can't just say, well, I think that guy's going to drop out. You can't do that. So you have to, protection becomes a really critical issue. Protection first. You don't have a pass game if you don't have protection.
And Minnesota with a couple of really vaunted players in the secondary, Stephon yep. Gilmore, and they got Harrison Smith. How do you like those matchups, Minnesota secondary against the likes of Debo, and assuming Brandon Ayuk can play more, Brandon Ayuk?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're not a heavy man coverage team. That's the thing. Surprisingly, even when they pressure, they play more zone concepts. Now, zones always have a matchup element to them, but they're not a heavy straight man-to-man team. So it's not so much, hey, this guy's going to have Samuel, this guy's going to have Ayuk. That's not really the way they play. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, obviously, they've got some different players. They signed Van Ginkle, who's a really good player from Miami. He showed up this past week. They signed Blake Cashman from Houston, who was very good for Houston a year ago before he got hurt. And what they basically did is they swapped out Daniil Hunter for Jonathan Grenard. Hunter's a little better, but Grenard's a very good player as well.
Greg, before you go, I'd like to ask you this, even though, I you know, look, it's only been 1 week, and this might feel a little speculative, but based on what you know and what you saw this week, what kind of an outlook and optimism would you have for this 49er defense as a whole and it's standing within the league?
Well, I think their front, let's talk in terms of playing nickel, because you end up playing nickel more than you play base. I think their front six is among the better front sixes in the league. We talked about their down four. We talked about Warner being the best linebacker in the league. Campbell, in my view, will be fine. Obviously, it's safety. I don't know if Hufanga is coming back. You guys might know that better. I don't know what his status is. Obviously, they played Odom, who throughout much of his career has been a high-level special teams player and a spot starter. They used Odom and Jair Brown kind of interchangeably. They both played on the back end. They both played in the box. Ward's a really good corner. The question becomes the other two corner spots. When they're in nickel, Lenoir goes into the slot, and they played Yodam on the outside. You know, I don't know if that's going to stay all year. I don't know what their feeling is about Renardo Green. He's a player I really liked coming out of Florida State. Florida State was a man-heavy defense, played a ton of press man, and I really loved Green. I don't know how he did through training camp, so I can't answer that. But I think that's where, I don't want to call it a concern. I would just say that's what we'll be looking at, to see how that plays out when they play against really good passing offenses and really good receivers.
Greg, we're going to do it every Wednesday, and you just showed everybody why. Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks. Look forward to it next week.
Yeah, indeed.
So do we. That's Greg freaking Cosell right there. Senior producer, NFL Dang Films.
Dropping knowledge.
Woo!
Greg, you may want to pick that up. You just dropped some knowledge over there.
Yeah, you did.
You may drop something.
Pick it up.
He's got me excited about this Minnesota front, and we can get into it more as we get through the week. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but rushing three and then rushing six. We don't do four and five. We're going to hit you with three, cover with eight, or we're going to bring six and then man up behind it. It's going to be a fun matchup now with Minnesota, and I think a defense that's underrated more than it's overrated.
You know what
heard?
I'm not going to put words in Greg's mouth. He didn't say this, but this is kind of the feeling I got in listening to that and just little things that he said about this week and last week and all that. The 49ers are playing a much better coached team this week than they did last week.
Right. Based on what he said about the defense.
Yeah, like
the Jets are kind of an ordinary the way they approach it, right? Nothing too surprising.
Yeah, I'm a Robert Saleh fan, and I run the steps sometimes too. Not at Levi's, don't live close enough, but like, I really like Robert Saleh.
For sure.
But you're starting to hear whispers with regard to coaching. Because the New York Jets have players. They got players. And wait until you hear what Nick Bosa said today after practice. Not specific to coaching the Jets and coaching the Vikings, but I think you can draw a line from one to the next. based on what we heard him say today. We'll play that for you coming up next. We're sponsored by Lucky California, and your phone calls are always welcome. What would be your game plan for Christian McCaffrey this year, now that we know what we know? 888-957-9570. That is our number. We're taking your calls all afternoon on Willard and Dips.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
See you on grass, bro. Yeah.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Greg Cosell was fantastic.
Oh, incredible. Yeah.
Although I don't know if he threw the haymaker that Nick Bosa threw at practice today.
Is it haymaker?
Well, I mean, it's compelling. Let's put it that way.
So I'm ecstatic about that.
Well, he was compelling last year when he said, well, we didn't really plan for that. Right. Mahomes and the zone keeper. I'm not going to say who didn't prepare us, but I think you can kind of figure that out, you guys.
Yeah. We have great energy.
We just don't have a, you know, we don't have a defensive coordinator that I like.
I can honestly say I'm sort of built for this.
I can honestly say we weren't prepared for this.
I can honestly say I missed camp. That also didn't help.
Right.
Whatever. No, it was a little different.
A haymaker from Bosa.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit of a strong term. But, okay. I mean, you decide. You decide. Check it out. Playing the Vikings this week. Hey, Nikki, what do you think?
This week, I think we're playing a better, honestly, a better team. That's they're playing better football, it looks like, and they run the ball well, and we're going to have to be better in our techniques. We kind of got away with some things last week. So yeah, we have to hone in and not pat ourselves on the back.
Okay, this is my favorite quote of the year already.
Sorry, just Robert, listen. But you're not very good. These guys better.
Listen again and try to hear the moment that Nick realizes he's going to be the lead story on New York sports radio by the afternoon. Listen one more time.
This week, I think we're playing a better... Honestly, a better team. That's they're playing better football, it looks like, and they run the ball well, and we're going to have to be better in our techniques. We kind of got away with some things last week. So yeah, we have to hone in and not pat ourselves on the back.
You know,
wow, this, it's just tough. You know, it's tough.
Yeah, this week, we're playing a better... Like,
they're playing better.
They're playing.
They won. Jets didn't.
Team.
Yeah.
Better. You know what this reminds me of?
It's tough.
Still, I've told you about this one. We've done it on the air before. My favorite moment like that in the history of sports media, when a player realizes he is about to step in the biggest pile of doo-doo, stops and goes the other way, is when Quinnen Williams was still in college with Alabama, and they were getting ready to play Oklahoma and Kyler Murray. And Quinnen is at the bowl game at those big media day, like, you know, he's at the dais, and he's like, honestly, we don't think that Kyler Murray... And then he just stops. He's about to say, he just stops, and you can feel that, like the specter of Nick Bosa was on his right shoulder, and he just makes a noise. He's like, we don't think that Kyler Murray... And then they go... What did you want to say about Kyler Murray? And he goes, "Nah, I'm good."
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's the end of the conversation.
That's it.
It's just like,
board material.
I'm out. I'm jumping out of this plane.
He's throwing shade at his former coach, and I'm sure he likes Saleh. And he probably does think, as Greg Cosell added in our interview, that Minnesota they do things differently. And, you know, coaching-wise, they're probably in a better spot than the Jets, especially their defensive approach. So Nick's right. You're going on the road. The spread, I believe, is 6. You don't know if you're going to have McCaffrey or not. No road game is going to be an easy one, especially when you go to a place that the franchise hasn't won there since before Nick was born. Before Grandy was born, 32 years. And I mean, I know that's a franchise trend, and it has nothing to do with this year's team, but you lost to him last year in Minnesota. Yeah.
I was going to say, I was going to call it a house of horrors, but I know it's a new house.
In the dome.
Yeah, the city is not been kind. And I do think that they might be talented. That's a big number on the road.
Yeah.
Week 2, that's a very big number. And obviously, it says that what happened on Monday night calmed everybody's fears about the 49ers. All the things that you heard, oh, what's the Super Bowl hangover and the holdout and the hold in, and boy, it just doesn't feel, oh, wait, never mind. That's what that spread says to me. But I don't know if I'm there yet. I don't mean that it matters about Super Bowl hangover and hold ins and holdouts. I just don't know if I'm ready to say, well, yeah, now the Niners are just going to go into cruise mode the same way they did for the first 5 weeks last week. And then what I also don't know is, like, is Nick reflecting something that's real, or have the 49ers just become really good at finding ways to not allow themselves to get complacent? Because
there's that, for sure.
That felt easy on Monday night, to be honest with you.
And, you know, if you want to compare Minnesota to the Jets, Minnesota might be a little bit better. They might be a little bit worse. They're probably in the same overall category. But Minnesota played the Giants. And if you wanted to do a bottom four teams in the NFL, you have the Panthers and you have the Giants, and then we can have a debate about who the other two are. The Giant team is terrible.
Yep, totally.
And Minnesota handled them as they should on the road, impressive win and all the rest of it. But the 49ers, I think, have enough veterans, and they do a good enough job of exactly what he just said. They're like finding ways to stay motivated. Minnesota beat you last year, and any road game is difficult, and you have your eyes on the ultimate prize, which is in February. But in the meantime, you have to go out there and handle your business. And it's a short week for San Francisco and travel. And Minnesota's a completely different team than what they were last year.
Well, it's a totally different environment also. Like, the environment matters. Brian Flores is a really good defensive coordinator. Listen to what Baldy said about it this morning.
Well, they saw him last year. Brian Flores is very talented. They have a brand new defensive line. I mean, all four starters are new. And they caused all kinds of problems to Daniel Jones, to the offensive line. Nobody played well in New York. Daniel Jones walked into a lot of sacks that just aren't necessary. He didn't see the field well. So Brian Flores is going to give you as many different looks as anybody in this whole business right now. So you got to be really patient. Kyle's going to study it real hard. I think you can learn a lot from their performance in Minnesota a year ago, because the secondary is pretty much the same from a year ago. And so I think the fact that there's a blueprint for what Brian likes to do from how they played him a year ago can help game plan for this year.
All right, so that's the thought going into this one. And I do think that the 49ers, I don't think they're going to make it up. It's not like they're that much better than the rest of the NFL, head and shoulders or anything like that. But I think this is something that veteran groups do, and the 49ers now qualify as that. They do have some young pieces that are getting put in there. They've got some new players here and there, and I think that that's what the standard-bearing voices in the locker room are going to do right now, which is don't get excited. I know, it was Monday night, we looked awesome. Don't start patting yourself on the back, because there's 1,000 miles to go here and Christian McCaffrey hasn't played football yet.
And this is a team that pretty much handled our offense last year. And I'm looking at the numbers. McCaffrey, 15 carries for 45 yards. He did have a touchdown in the game against Minnesota. Brock Purdy threw 2 interceptions. And it was a game that the Niners trailed most of the way, and they could never get on top and get over the hump, in part because Kirk Cousins refused to get off the field. So this is a team that's totally different from last year offensively, but on defense they have the same mentality, and they have a good defensive-minded defensive coordinator.
And speaking of this this camp that worried everybody, right? Oh, the Niners, the vibe is off. Do you know what? Maybe it wasn't. Maybe none of us are on the team, and we have no idea exactly how it was going, because I also thought this might have been the number one thing I was thinking about on Monday night while watching that football game. The 49ers, like all teams in the NFL, you come out, you start your season, and you're like, oh, you got some cobwebs. They snapped out of that as fast as any team that I watched. Maybe the Saints and Vikings, and for reasons that you already detailed, that was their opponent as much as anything else. But the 49ers snapped out and cleared the cobwebs and looked like they were playing at a pretty high level pretty fast. So how do you do that when you have a quote-unquote crappy camp? Listen to what Deebo Samuel said about the way they started.
Sure, especially coming off the Super Bowl loss, you know, I think a lot of us use that as motivation to come in and kind of put it behind us and not look back for what happened, but kind of like move forward and just control the things that we can do for it, like day to day and week to week. And I just think everybody was just trying to perfect their craft every day.
So Deebo is speaking to basically a seriousness in camp. And I wonder if that translated to the media, because we are like often the group that you're there, you're talking to people, you're watching it, and maybe it didn't look like the party that it's looked like before. And we translated that as, well, Brandon's not here and Christian's not playing and Trent's not here and they lost the Super Bowl. Oh, they just don't feel well. And Debo's like, no, it's because our nose is to the damn grindstone because we're so ticked off about what happened last year.
Yeah, and Trent Williams even said a similar thing. I heard a quote yesterday, one of our shows was playing it, how when he finally got into camp, he came in and there wasn't anybody joking around. I mean, no towel snapping, no pranks, and no hijinks. It was business. And he was looking at the rookies and thinking, these guys who've been here before he was this year are already like head down, like Debo saying, nose to the grindstone and like setting about becoming professional players and really getting ready for the season, knowing full well that this team's in the Super Bowl window.
The comment you are referring to,
you got him?
Sounded a little bit like this.
I walked in, I'm like, damn, everybody is like laser focused. Everybody flying around. It's like not a lot of joking going on. It's like we got a lot of new players in the locker room that's already playing at San Francisco, you know, at what we expect around here. So, you know, looked at all the young guys and the draft and just like, damn, I obviously we had a good roster last year. I didn't know that they could improve it. But, I mean, in my opinion, we improved. And those guys are playing their butts off.
Okay, that came right after the game on Monday night.
Yeah, he says it a lot better than I did. I stammered through it.
Yeah, no, I like
gist.
Yeah, I got the idea.
I added the towel snapping and the hijinks because that's what I do.
That's why I liked yours.
But
that was
all business, you know, and that's where you get. And it's hard to do it week in and week out, but this is the first road trip. So, you know, everybody, rookies and stuff, is your first time going to a city, and Minnesota's going to be all revved up for their team that's 1-0, and it's a new experience for the younger players.
You ever struck by how stupid we all are?
All the time.
Okay.
I mean, I try to remember what I don't know, because a lot of times I get wrapped up in what I do know, and you put more import on what you do know as opposed to putting that same energy into what you don't know.
Yeah, like I think that's very well said. Like, who cares what you don't know as long as you admit it? Like, it took me, and that was a while, like that's being in your 20s, is you don't know the power of that phrase, I don't know.
Exactly.
Like, it's okay. It's okay to say I'm sorry. It's okay to say I was wrong. It's okay to say I don't know, because there's tons of stuff I don't know. I'm wrong probably like more often than a broken clock.
Huh?
You know what I mean? And like, yeah. And Dibs, I'm sorry. I don't even know why, but I probably did something at some point.
Not sorry.
No, those are
apology not accepted.
Those are
powerful
phrases, though.
They are.
And the reason that just popped into my head is I'm having one of these moments that where I'm just laughing at all of us. Me, you, definitely Lucas, Grandy, every caller we've had the last 6 weeks of our lives have been worrying and talking about how the vibe was off and hangovers and predicting that things will not go as expected. And obviously, those predictions aren't wrong yet. They're just 1-0. But do you notice how quickly we went from that to, well, this is the best roster they've ever had? how quickly did we go from, oh no, this is last dance, hangover, vibes off, hold in, hold out. How quickly, one game, I think this is the best roster that Kyle Shanahan has ever had. I mean, and not just people saying it, like Trent Williams saying it. That's funny. That's funny to me.
Well, it's the way it works in this league. And if they go out Sunday and they lay an egg, let's say the game goes exactly like it did last year, except this time it's Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold.
I knew that was
coming. I couldn't help it. 370 yards or whatever, and he looks like the next great quarterback, and you end up with three turnovers, and you lose to Minnesota again. Well, then come Monday, Brockster's millions and everything else we talk about, it's going to sound different. And, you know, there'll be people saying, well, this Niner team's overrated. The Jets aren't that good, and Minnesota took it to you. They're overrated. So everything changes week to week.
Wow.
In this business, in this league.
Right, but I would say that right now the optimism is not just baked into how the 49ers looked, but now the outlook that you have, which has clearly changed. I mean, even from 4 o'clock on Monday, what is it right now? Almost 4 o'clock on Wednesday. It was almost exactly 48 hours ago that what happened. Grandy hit the breaking news. Christian's out.
That's right.
That was 48 hours ago, almost to the mark.
Feels like a week ago.
Exactly. 48 hours ago, we get that news. And the party that's cruising around Levi's Stadium all of a sudden has rain falling on it. And now, look at how we feel about it now. I look at this roster that so many are calling the best that the Niners have had. I look at a dominant performance in a primetime game against a supposedly good team. And I think to myself, this team might acquire Christian McCaffrey. It might acquire 50% of Brandon Ayuk. It might acquire Talanoa Hufanga. Like, you're going to make acquisitions on this team that are already baked in, and it already looks like it has the chance, at least, to perform at a very high and balanced level.
It should, and, you know, that's assuming you don't lose anybody else along the way, because an NFL season, everyone talks about it being a marathon, and part of that is enduring injuries and getting guys healthy and getting guys back, and Greenlaw and Hufanga and Ricky Pearsall, for crying out loud, who hopefully is ready to go for week 5. This team will be forever changing as the season goes on, but you take it one week in, and you can't help but get excited. Even Captain Stingy back there, Grandy, with his grades, he's giving out A's and A-minuses and B-pluses.
Yep.
And deservedly so. So, I mean, fans
Captain
are...
Stingy?
Oh, yeah. Stingosaurus Rex is what I was going to go with, because we're in a dinosaur space right now.
That was my prediction. I thought that you were going to be really, really tough on the 49ers, and you
weren't. Well, he couldn't. He did not have the... I mean, even Dr. Negatron in there doesn't have the bandwidth to nitpick and give a position group a C. You couldn't.
No.
I like Dr. Negatron, probably my favorite.
Was there even a player? McKivitz? Campbell? Was there a player that you
wanted? Lucas kind of bullied me into asking Greg Cosell about Devondre Campbell.
Yep.
And Greg was like, no, he's going to be fine. So all of Niner fans who want to nitpick on somebody, it's Devondre Campbell and get over it.
There's a chance that Greg thinks Devondre Campbell's going to be fine. There's a chance he's like, dude, I didn't know they could ask me about Devondre Campbell.
Oh, he was ready for it.
I mean, he's Greg.
Yeah.
He's ready. But you know what I mean? Do you ever think about Greg Cosell's week? What happens?
Well, he watches every play from every game.
Right, but you don't have to just watch, like, more than twice.
Right.
Like, how much film are you watching to where you just pick up the phone and be like, ask me anything? You're like, all right, what about the third linebacker on the Bills? Well, let me tell you what happened. Here you go. And he just, like, what? What is happening each week? How much football does he watch?
It's crazy. It's crazy. He's got to watch. I wonder how many of these he does. Probably not 32.
No.
So I'm sure there are teams that he drills down on a little bit more closely. And then their opponent and their previous opponent.
Well, that's the thing.
And then their opponent's
opponent. You don't know where, but he doesn't know where. The, exactly. Like, I want to let everyone know that. Greg doesn't know where that conversation's going to go. We do not prompt him.
No.
Nobody's texting him. They're going to ask you about Brandon Ayuk. Like, it's just dude talk. And we start asking stuff. And he can answer anything about every player.
Impressive.
Devondre Campbell. I think, come on. Come on. There's a lot of people. This guy's supposed to have memorized. I considered but it's only week two, so I didn't do it yet. I might do this later in the year. I considered asking him what went wrong for the 49er defense in their game against Minnesota last year. He probably would have been able to answer the question. He probably just from memory.
No doubt. He's got that kind of memory. So, yeah, Devondre Campbell. Greg says,
Devondre Campbell.
Go ahead and rest easy, 49er fans. He's going to be just fine. And the length that he was talking about, the length at linebacker.
By the time we get to December or even Thanksgiving, that might be Dre Greenlaw.
Yeah, or Winters in the interim. Or
D. Winters.
Yeah.
Like, this team's going to acquire a bunch of people.
Right. And I just watching them on defense and, you know, Greg pointing out how much they played nickel defense, the base with five in the secondary, three out of every four snaps was in that base. And then you start to think about what happens when Dre Greenlaw does come back and you have your four down linemen and it's Fred and Dre, and then it's five guys in coverage. That defense is going to be fun to watch.
Did you hear what Brandon Ayuk said today?
Missed it.
Check it out.
I think after the game, I didn't watch the field until this morning. I was a little bit scared to watch it, but not as bad as I thought.
You were scared to watch it?
I was scared to watch it.
Did it just not feel right at the time?
Okay. Just watched the film today. Was scared to watch it. Said it didn't look as bad as he thought it would, but no, things did not feel right out there.
I can imagine.
I wonder why.
Well, you go from the Super Bowl loss to a instant TikTok and a sullen face in the exit interviews and everything that took place over the summer. I don't need to enunciate all of the things that we know that he went through. And then you finally sign, you get a couple of practices, boom, Monday Night Football. Go play. Go make plays, Brandon, on a handful of targets. Go ahead and make sure you're perfect or else. And so all the pressure and all of the buildup in the offseason, you finally get to play and boop, and then boop.
Come on, man. I mean, like, look, we're so past the point of wanting to belabor this issue. But at the same time, like, I'm giving 49er fans open invitation to just shake your head. You're allowed to shake your head on this one. It's fine.
SMH.
They're fine. Everything's fine. But yeah, SMH. Like, come on, man. And all I can hope for at this point, because it is, it's over, it's in the past, I really hope that a lesson was learned. I really do. Yeah, I don't want
camp matters.
I don't want that. Well, it's not just camp matters, because Trent Williams didn't go to camp and he looked fantastic. And Christian McCaffrey didn't have camp. We're all hoping that he's back. Again, it's not so much what happened, it's the way it happened. I just hope, and I don't even mean that the lesson is only learned by Brandon. Everybody. Because remember, we were talking about this, like, oh, this is the way players are going to do it with the Niners now, like, or all teams. Just wait and push it and push it, push it, push it all the way to the end. You'll get more money. You'll get more money. Man, Blake Snell, push it, push it. We're going to get more money. Dude, there's a damn cost. There's a cost to negotiating that way. I hope agents are watching. This is pointless. There's no need. There is absolutely nothing good that comes from, I'm going to get 17 more cents and blow up the first quarter of my season.
Probably was more than 17 cents.
I don't think it was anything.
Well, if they were offering him 26 back in March, then he got more than 17 cents extra.
But he got that offered at the beginning of camp. This is all well documented. And the dude was about 10 seconds away from being a Steeler. Like, this was not a good experience. Like, just...
He was at camp.
Come on, man. Come on, dog.
He's just there so he doesn't get fined.
Yeah.
And they say they don't want me.
Kyle Shanahan was talking about it again today. Remember the Jay Glazer story of, everybody's blowing whistles and calling people and screaming and yelling and running around in the facility because, like, don't trade with the Steelers. Hold on. So apparently the story was, Kyle Shanahan had to run upstairs because they weren't taking his call, and he wanted to tell him to stop. Brandon's ready to sign. So he talked about why he ran up the stairs.
I had to sprint because I had a team meeting at 8:30, and I was getting ready for my team meeting. Brandon just randomly walked in and talked to me at 8:15. Very Brandon liked to pick that type of time because I was trying to get ready for something else. 10 minutes into talk to him, I realized we need to talk a little bit more when the meeting was over. Meetings can go a while and stuff, and I knew we were in discussions a lot with Pittsburgh, so I actually called up to John, and he didn't answer, picked up on the first ring. So I just wanted to make sure he wasn't on the other line making any trades. So I ran up there and just said, hold on, let's talk after this meeting.
Did you have to like barge in?
No, I'm not going to make it more dramatic than already is.
And I love, he's like, it's very like Brandon to just walk in and start bringing this up 15 minutes before I'm supposed to be doing something else.
Pretty funny.
Well, it also, I like a lot of the reports that we heard, they were true. Like Kyle, they were close. Kyle gets annoyed sometimes by Brandon Ayuk.
No doubt. And you just heard it right there. It was like so much, like, you know, it's such a Brandon thing to do. Coming right before my meeting. But
guy.
Yeah.
All right. We're presented by Fremont Bank. Celebrating 60 years of full service banking with no compromises. All right. There's a couple things we need to get to coming up around the bed. Coming up next, we'll circle back to the start and take your phone calls, 888-957-9570. Knowing all that you know about the McCaffrey situation, and we'll play some things for you. What is your game plan if you're coaching the Niners? How would you like to see them handle the McCaffrey situation this year? Your phone calls now at 888-957-9570. Plus, an old friend, a former 49er quarterback, weighs in on Brock Purdy, and it was fascinating. That's coming up next on Withered and Dibs.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.